Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. We're going to hook up with our friends over at AccuWeather in about 10 minutes or so and talk about the forecast for Game 1 and 2 at Busch Stadium for the NLCS between the Cardinals and the Washington Nationals. And I keep refreshing the MLB website to see if they're going to update the start times for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Friday and Saturday. I don't know if they'll go that far out. They might at least put a couple of days out. But we at least know the start times for this weekend. So Friday, Game 1, Cardinals hosting at 7.08 p.m. here in St. Louis. That's Central Time. And then Saturday's Game 2 hosting at 3.08 first pitch, which you can hear all the action on KMOX. It's the only place you're going to get the full coverage. I mean, seriously, look at everyone that's involved here at KMOX. Mike Shannon, John Rooney, Klaibs. Everyone, you know, Tom Ackerman, you've been hearing the updates with him. In fact, he's got some really cool programming starting next week with Ozzie Smith. How cool is that? Chris Raby, the whole gang, man, they're all together for this. Ricky Horton. So you're not going to get that anywhere else. My goodness. Every time you pop on TBS and they don't give any respect to the St. Louis crowd. That's why you don't even bother with them if you have the option. You go straight to KMOX.com. All right, so I wanted to do this before we go and head over to AccuWeather and find out what those temperatures are going to be. Kevin Killeen had a great whole nother story. I normally don't start the shows off with whole nother stories, but I thought this one was just so good. Let me just throw this hypothetical scenario out at you. You're walking your dog. Your dog does a number two. What do you do after that? Okay. Some people think, all right, no big deal. I'm just going to leave it. Some people pick it up. Now, it is your absolute, absolute responsibility to pick that up. But Kevin Killeen hit the streets and he wanted to find out for himself, what do people really do in that scenario? I'll ask that to you too. If you want to text it in at 314-436-7900. Lots of duty talk here.
I was trying to explain to a woman downtown how the expectation to pick up your dog's poop on a walk was not always so.
And, you're a young woman. This expectation's been hanging over you all your life.
It has.
Are you aware there was a time when people used to say, well, if dog pooped on somebody's lawn, that's just kind of like dog poop roulette. You know, the spinning wheel of dog poop will land on different lawns.
I think you need to hang out with better people because I've never heard someone say that.
What's your dog's name?
Miranda.
Miranda?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a dog that's been arrested. When Miranda has to go number two and you're on a walk, what do?
I pick it up.
Do you pick it up just that they might see you, or if it's totally dark, if it's a moonless night, would you leave it there?
No, it's an honor thing.
Either one of you dog owners?
Yeah, I'm a dog owner.
What's your dog's name?
Millie.
And does Millie eat dry food or the can that's very moist?
She eats dry food.
And when Millie has to do business, Do you believe in picking up after her?
Absolutely, unequivocally. Yes, every time.
Well, he's a very considerate man.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you think?
I would only leave it there if it was in the mayor's front yard.
I wonder if we're doing our dogs harm on a deep level by cleaning up after them. I mean, dogs everywhere. For them, poop is part of their network of communication. It's like the morning paper. Other dogs like sniffing around and catching up on the news, who came by. To remove this data makes dogs feel disconnected and just adrift in a human world. Another issue that's come up lately is what to do after you pick up the poop in that plastic bag. I say chuck it in the nearest trash can, even if it's somebody else's trash can out there for trash night. But some people say, no, that's not right. You should not put your dog's poop in another person's trash can. I wish we could all go back to a simpler time when no one cared about dog poop. If this keeps up, eventually dog walters will be guilted into carrying water bottles with them at all times so they can pour it on the grass wherever their dog just went number one to keep somebody's grass from burning out. With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
I never considered Kevin's solution, which is you carry a bottle of water and you wash the thing out. So basically you dilute it. I guess you could do that. There's a few opportunities where I have not picked up dog duty when I've had the dog out. And it was back when I was in Indiana. We lived in a neighborhood that was expanding out. So they built the road, but they didn't have homes yet. They were just empty plots. And towards the back, there was like a concrete runout area, and it was just all field and area. It was just all field. They weren't going to actually develop anything there. It was just like forest nothing area that was owned by the developing company. You know what? The dog went back there. Didn't bother me. You know, back in the forest, no one's going to be walking back there. It's concrete construction runoff. No big deal. But if it was in any place that was a common area or someone else's property, absolutely you pick it up. Now, one person texted in, I figure it will rot. I'm not picking it up. Now, if you have a dog, I wonder what that dude's backyard looks like. Is your backyard just filled with things that you're hoping will rot and you won't pick up? Come on now. You don't want to do that to someone else's yard. If you're one of those that pick it up, one of those that do not pick it up, I guess we could look at Kevin Killeen's piece. And if you really want to have some fun with it, you could try to argue it's like the morning paper. It's how the dogs communicate with each other. It's how they catch up with what's going on in the block. When I walk my dog now, I don't even stop to let him sniff things. We just run a mission. I don't give him the opportunity to go to the bathroom. And I feel like that's the best thing to do. At least, you know, you're going out there, you do your business. Don't let him do his business. We're going to check in with AccuWeather coming up in just a few minutes. Our friends over there are going to give us an update of what to expect for Game 1 and Game 2 at Busch Stadium this weekend. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Yeah, a little chilly today, and it's going to be chilly tomorrow, and it's going to be chilly the next day. Now I really want some chili. I could really go for some chili right now. You know, it's almost midnight, and talking about chili. A couple text messages that just came in, and we're going to hook up with our friends at AccuWeather in just a moment. One person said, I like when mine goes in other yards, less for me to pick up. Oh, man, that's a great way for you to get in trouble with your neighbors. Hope you like them to come out and punch you square in the nose. Let's see. Here's another one. Good evening, Ryan. My dog has updated her media from the newspaper to checking her emails while doing her business. Thanks, Tammy. That's very nice. All right. Joining us now, AccuWeather meteorologist Dan Pitanowski. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, good evening.
I appreciate the time here, and pretty exciting news here in St. Louis. We're just waiting for game one of the NLCS. The Washington Nationals will be coming into town. We're going to be taking them on game one Friday at Busch Stadium, downtown St. Louis. And we look at the forecast. In this weather, it's like it hits a cliff and just drops off. I was hoping you can give us a preview of what to expect tomorrow leading up to game time, which is 7:08 at night.
Sure, yeah. Big changes on the way in terms of temperatures. Cold fronts crossing the area right now. So we'll have some showers and thunderstorms around during the overnight hours and through Friday morning. I think any rain is definitely long gone, well before game time, certainly by the first pitch. But behind the cold front, the big changes will be a drop in temperature. By the time we get to Friday evening, a first pitch temperature is going to be right around 45 degrees. I know. it's hard to believe. And by the end of the game, temperatures could be in the low 40s. It'll be pretty windy throughout the day tomorrow, but I think the wind will die down as we head towards game time. So by the time we get the first pitch, maybe only around 10 miles per hour or so. But still, with temperatures in the 40s and a wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour, it's going to feel like it's in the 30s. Hard to believe with us sitting near 70 degrees right now.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's one of those deals where the high for the day will be at like midnight.
Yeah,
that drops.
That's exactly right. And it's going to just keep falling and fall right through the 50s and into the 40s. So a very dramatic change.
Yeah. And what's the temperature where you start to see your breath?
Well, it also depends how much moisture is in the air, what the dew point is, and how much wind there is as well. Often when it's really windy, that will keep you from seeing your own breath. But I would say during the game tomorrow night, certainly with temperatures in the 40s, once that wind dies down tomorrow evening a little bit, you'll probably be able to see your own breath.
Dan Pitanowski, AccuWeather meteorologist, joining us here on KMOX. And yesterday, when we were forecasting what was going to happen on Friday and Saturday, this seems like it's even colder than what we were looking at yesterday. So what caused a dramatic drop in the temperature when it came to the forecasting?
Yeah, just a very strong cold front, a very chilly air mass. This is all part of the same storm system where we had a heavy snow and blizzard conditions across parts of the Dakotas and Montana, and that's all moving into Minnesota. So a very cold air mass is associated with this storm. And that's just plunging southward and southeastward behind this cold front. So, of course, we're certainly missing out on the snow, of course, like the Dakotas and Montana have. But that cold air is coming southeastward. And so we're going to see a big change in temperatures here.
You know, producer Mike wanted me to ask you this question. I don't know if he was serious or not, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So when the temperatures drop like this, when you see it go from, like, you know, at midnight, we're talking about 70 degrees. And then by first pitch later in the night, you're looking at mid-40s, so that's a pretty dramatic drop. Does that do anything when the temperature and the pressure is different when it comes to throwing a ball? Like, will that actually affect the players?
Well, I think the main thing that will affect the players is just the cold. You know, certainly trying, you know, and especially batting, you know, you hit one the wrong way off the bat, you know, you get a real stinger, your hands will sting. So I think just not necessarily the temperature change per se, but I think just the fact that the entire game is going to be played in the 40s, certainly much cooler. It's funny, we went from a record heat and the games we played in Atlanta, we had first pitch temperatures in the middle 90s. Now we're dealing with temperatures in the 40s.
I know. It was so hot the other day. Milk was a bad choice. So on Saturday, it rebounds. Like, temperatures go right back around, don't they?
Yeah, recovers nicely. Saturday for game two, Saturday afternoon looks great. Probably right around 60 at first pitch, maybe falling into the upper 50s by the end of the game. It'll be dry, plenty of sunshine, so certainly no rain to worry about. Biggest factor on Saturday, in addition to having the warmer temperatures, will be the wind. Pretty good southwest wind, maybe 10 to 15, 10 to 20 miles per hour. And we get a wind like that that's blowing almost straight out towards center. So that could certainly have an influence on things Saturday afternoon.
Wow. All right. Well, if you were to forecast to next week, like maybe next weekend, could you look maybe like 8 days out? What would next weekend's temperature look like now?
Well, it looks like at this point, certainly we're going to see some warming here in the short term this weekend. And a lot of next week, through the middle of the week, looks pretty warm. And then I think by the time we get to next weekend, it might not be bad. We might still be talking about highs in the 60s.
Oh, okay. I'm hoping that the Cardinals will wrap up the series. It doesn't go to a game 6 and 7. It would be nice to get a couple extra days off there. But that's the next time we'd have some home games here if the series does require a game 6 or 7. All right, so overall, we get through a chilly one on your Friday. Saturday, it seems like it's going to stay like that throughout the next of the week, you know, mid-60s and dropping down cooler through the night. That's really what to expect.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It looks like most of our overnight lows are either going to be in the 40s or the 50s. So once we get past this big change on Friday and this big drop off in temperatures, we do sort of rebound and sort of typical mid-October temperatures, highs in the 60s, overnight lows in the 50s or 40s.
Meteorologist Dan Pitanowski from AccuWeather. If you could, sometimes you see how workplaces or different government agencies will allow you to print off a certificate to send to your work saying we're excusing this person from work for today. You know, let's say there's an important game that people want to watch, so they try to give out these like preempting excuses. Now, if you could give us a little leverage here, because my wife has already threatened to turn on the furnace when it gets cold at night. And I said, it's way too early to turn that furnace on to heat up the house. Totally unnecessary. If you can give me that little reassurance so I can point back to our friends at AccuWeather, all the husbands that may be listening right now that need to say something to their wives, hey, no, I heard from the meteorologist at AccuWeather on KMOX that you don't need to turn the furnace on. Can you give me that reassurance and save a lot of people trouble?
I think we'll be okay because we have one chilly night, but then temperatures recover very quickly over the weekend. We'll be talking about sunshine and highs in the 60s, so a little too early to crank it up just yet.
See, don't do it. That's all. You just got to say, don't do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah, save a few bucks on the utility bills.
I know. No, as long as you can. Dan Pitanowski from AccuWeather, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
All right, you're welcome.
That was fun. He joins us on, does that count? Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line? I don't know. I might as well say it. Well, it's always cool when AccuWeather joins us. They always do it live, and they're always so friendly. And it's good to know that tomorrow, just going to keep getting colder, 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 colder. Not looking forward to that. You know, somehow my dog, I don't know how he can figure this out, but he knows when it's going to get cold. He knows when it's going to rain because he always, like, out of nowhere will jump up, run to the door. It's like he just knows something's about to happen outside, and he doesn't want to have to do his business when that thing is happening. So he'll go out, do his business, come back in, and sure enough, within the next 5 minutes, it starts raining. Or in some cases, the temperature drops. He knows. I don't know how he does it. He just does it. It's like those old ladies that always like rub their knee and say, oh, I could feel a storm coming. You know, you get some kind of surgery done somewhere below the waist and you feel it. The barometric pressure. That's right. They just know. Some people just know that sort of thing. Coming up next, I want to talk to Josh Campbell's a former FBI agent. He's no longer in the FBI. But when he did serve in the FBI, it was under James Comey. Yeah, a little controversial figure there, huh? Also, he was part of Operation Crossfire Hurricane, which was the Russian investigation that the FBI put on. He was also part of the Hillary Clinton investigation. Do you want to guess what cool FBI name that one had? You're going to have to wait and find out. I'm telling you, it's worth the wait. It's so good. It's a really good one. We'll get your official AccuWeather forecast coming up next, too, as you just heard from our friend Dan Pitanowski there, but we'll do some forecasting for the start of next week, too. On Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Joining us now, a former special assistant to FBI Director James Comey, Josh Campbell, has a new book out called Crossfire Hurricane, Inside Donald Trump's War on the FBI. Thanks for coming on to KMOX.
Thanks so much for having me. A real pleasure.
So I kind of want to first start with your role in the FBI. What kind of things were you doing?
So I had a pretty long career doing a number of different assignments. I'd started at headquarters. Then once I became an FBI agent, I went out to the field, did a number of assignments in the counterterrorism realm, domestically, and then had the opportunity to be part of one of the FBI's small teams that is actually responsible for international missions, and that is conducting terrorism investigations overseas, kidnapping investigations overseas. Spent a lot of time lashed up with counterparts from CIA and the Defense Department and the various international spaces. And then as I progressed in my career, went back to headquarters. And one of my last assignments was serving as special assistant to then FBI Director James Comey.
Yeah. Were you there working under James Comey at the very start of the Russian investigation?
I was. I was there at headquarters and seemingly through two very tumultuous investigations. So there was the Hillary Clinton case, which I was there for, but then also, which would come after that, obviously, is the investigation into members of the Trump campaign and their ties to Russia. And that's what I write about in the book, is really bringing, your listeners inside that experience, what it was like to work in this agency that was now investigating, essentially both candidates for high office. Mm-hmm. You had the Democrats and then obviously people associated with Trump and then later Trump himself. under investigation based on his the actions that he took as it related to Comey. And then I take readers through the firing of Jim Comey. I was there that day when he received word that he was no longer the director of the FBI, which really threw this agency into a state of chaos. Because at the time, you know, the reason that was given to the public was because James Comey was too mean to Hillary Clinton. But in reality, those of us who knew, you know, what was going on as it related to Russia knew that it was probably more sinister than that. And the president would later admit that it was a Russia on his mind when he decided to get rid of the FBI director.
You say as part of this book, the Russian investigation code name was Crossfire Hurricane, which is the name of your book, Inside Donald Trump's War on the FBI. And was there a code name for Hillary Clinton's emails?
There was. The code name for that case was Mid-Year Exam. And people try to read into what, you know, these code names actually mean. It's not as exciting, I think, as most people probably think. It's essentially, you know, when you have a high-profile investigation that's being very tightly held to just a small group for purposes of operational security, will be assigned a code name, unlike other FBI investigations, which are essentially just named based on who the suspect is in the case. So for Hillary, it was Mid-Year Exam. And again, for the Russia investigation, pulling from, I think, an old Rolling Stones song, they went with Crossfire Hurricane.
Oh, I never knew that one. What's is that the title of the song? Might have to look that one up.
It was the title of one of their songs, yeah. You know, it's so interesting. And I read about the book. It's actually a good metaphor for where the FBI found itself. You know, I mean, squarely between, you know, two entities that were blasting it, you know, down the street from Congress and then the White House. Really in this chaotic storm as it attempted to weather, you know, these investigations, and, you know, very much found the, at least the people inside the FBI found themselves in a position that they had never been in. And that was fair game for political attacks. And, you know, as I write about, as the president attempted to essentially deflect, you know, from the Russia investigation, his goal was to try to bring down or bring to heel the investigators who are running the case.
Wow. I think that would be a fun job to have in the FBI, someone that gets to name some of these code names. Former Special Assistant to the FBI Director James Comey is joining us here. His name is Josh Campbell, and his book Crossfire Hurricane is out now. I'm wondering, at the very onset of that Crossfire Hurricane, when you started, what was the scope of the investigation at that point?
So the investigation initially started because a Trump campaign aide named George Papadopoulos, who has now you know, become a very public figure and a bit of a conspiracy theorist, a bit is being generous. He's a very much a conspiracy theorist in my book. Essentially, he was in London at a bar speaking with an Australian diplomat and let loose that he knew that the Russians had dirt on candidate Hillary Clinton. And at the time, the ambassador to Australia, who he was talking with there in London, didn't really know what to make of it. It didn't really mean anything to him. But afterwards, as we all now know, the Russians were engaged in this brazen attempt to hack into the Democratic National Committee, to steal information, to weaponize information in order to thwart public opinion. After that started coming to light, this diplomat, you know, put two and two together and wondered if the dirt that Papadopoulos was bragging about may have been alluding to this campaign of attack against the DNC. And so he did what any good diplomat would do, or his country did, and picked up the phone to the FBI. And it was at that point that the FBI was staring at a really troubling set of facts, because it wasn't just Papadopoulos with these suspicious ties to the Russians, but there were three other Trump campaign people, for a total of four, Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, and Carter Page, who all had their own sinister ties to the Russians. And so, you know, staring at those facts, the FBI did what it does. You know, if there's a potential threat to national security, it opens an investigation. And there, you know, Crossfire Hurricane was born out of that.
When was the actual start of that investigation? Do you remember when that happened?
So, and this has actually been still up for great debate, regardless of, you know, how many times people that, like me, that were in government and, you know, other experts say. The case began in July 2016, again, following this meeting with Papadopoulos. But what the president and you know, some of his enablers continue to still peddle is the idea that this investigation stemmed from the so-called Steele dossier. This was the British spy who was employed by a Democratic-linked firm to gather opposition research on Donald Trump. This was the substance of that infamous Trump Tower meeting where Comey is briefing Trump on the salacious material that this spy had found. But regardless of, you know, that, I know that's just spin, because the actual genesis of the investigation, as Robert Mueller indicated in his report, started in July of 2016 from that one meeting, again, where you had a Trump campaign official who was boasting about knowing what the Russians were up to as it related to going after Hillary Clinton.
Did you work in the FBI until the conclusion of the Mueller report, or were you gone before that?
No, so I left in February of 2018, and by that time, the investigation was still very much, you know, underway at that point. And, you know, it's fascinating as I look back on the career because, you know, as I write about in the book, the FBI is an agency that I love, that I still love to this day. It was a mission unlike any other. But I came to the realization, and, you know, I was sitting there with my colleagues inside the FBI on the receiving end of this campaign of attack by the president of the United States, who was day in and day out calling us crooks, calling us criminals, you know, the so-called deep state, these people who are out to get him, which he was essentially saying that we violated our oath to the Constitution. And, you know, that started as frustration and soon built into up to anger. And I looked around and there weren't leaders inside the Justice Department who were willing to stand up to the president and say that what he was saying was not only wrong, but would have long-term consequences on public safety. I mean, the attorney general was silent. The deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, was silent. And so I just looked and, you know, I thought, OK, if I don't speak up now, I'm going to regret this years later down, you know, when I retire, if knowing I just kept my head down to draw a paycheck. So I decided to step out at that point and just help the American people really understand what is fact, what is fiction. These agencies are imperfect. I write about a lot of their faults in the book. They have to be held to account when they make mistakes. But it is nothing like the agency that the president would have you believe the FBI is. You know, this state, this deep state, you know, organization filled with criminals. In fact, it's an organization of patriots that work again every day to protect this country.
Josh Campbell is author of Crossfire Hurricane, joining us now on KMOX. And I'm wondering, after the report came out, the Mueller report, if there were any conclusions or anything that was in that report that may have been contradictory to some of the things that you worked on while you were involved in the investigation.
No, not contradictory. In fact, I mean, it was revelatory in the sense that, you know, Mueller had an all-star team of investigators that were hard charging on this investigation. And one thing that may fascinate your listeners is I still talk with, you know, folks that are inside the FBI, and there's this general consensus that had Donald Trump not fired James Comey, obviously we wouldn't have a Robert Mueller on the scene. And although the FBI was investigating members of the Trump campaign, I think because there was this really aggressive effort to bring this large team together, I mean, they started finding out all kinds of criminality, you know, regarding people in Trump world and issuing indictment after indictment. And I just wonder how life may have turned out for a lot of these people, again, had Donald Trump not made the decision to fire the person who was leading the investigation into his campaign.
Mm. I think some of the things that became pretty well known during the course of the investigation had to do with Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. Did you work with them?
I did, and I write about them in the book. I mean, you know, as someone who's now in journalism, you know, my first priority is obviously to ensuring that our viewers and listeners and readers, that they're told the truth and they have an accurate depiction of what's reality. And that being the case, although I thought highly of both of them, you know, inside the FBI, you stare at their actions and what they did, and as I write about in Crossfire Hurricane, they brought great shame to the FBI through their lack of judgment, you know, on a number of fronts. And, you know, they've since been held accountable. Neither of them are still at the FBI. Now, I do think Strzok's case has been politicized beyond anything that should have happened to a public servant. I mean, to have the president of the United States, you know, personally blasting him on Twitter, to have, this group of enablers in Congress really destroying the reputation of this person, using him as a villain, I think is disgusting. But that said, you know, if I take the names away from both of these people and look at their actions, I do fault them for what they did. And as I mentioned, they've since been held accountable.
You know, if just from behind the scenes sense, when those text messages became available and the media started to report and show the screenshots and some of the different text that were inside of those text messages, was that awkward? I mean, for someone that when you know someone personally and you work with them and they're a colleague and something like that becomes national news, how did that change the working relationship?
Yeah, you know, I'd say more than awkward. I mean, it was infuriating. Again, because you had people who just exercised such terrible judgment. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that what the president is trying to portray, that these two were tipping the scale and trying to arrange an investigation to bring him down. That is just garbage. That's nonsense. Because if they really, if that was their goal, to bring down Donald Trump, they would have stopped him before he ever got elected. They would have leaked the fact that his campaign was under investigation. But obviously they didn't do that because these were public servants who knew that they had to do their work in secret, in the counterintelligence space. It was infuriating for us who, you know, anyone inside the FBI to look at what happened and know that someone made such bad decisions. But the goal of these two, I think they were venting, and obviously they had deep animus toward Donald Trump. But the FBI is such, and I really take readers inside the dynamic inside my book about how this agency works. There's no way that one or two people or a group of people would be able to manufacture an investigation to bring down anyone, because there's so many checks and balances that go beyond the FBI that would have stopped that from happening. But nevertheless, you know, the president continues that campaign, trying to portray himself as a victim.
Author Josh Campbell, a former FBI agent and special assistant to James Comey. His new book's called Crossfire Hurricane, Inside Donald Trump's War on the FBI. We'll continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Josh Campbell joins us, author of Crossfire Hurricane, Inside Donald Trump's War on the FBI. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just wanted to ask you about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And something that was brought up was how they may have handled the investigation into Hillary Clinton, which was investigation mid-year exam. I just wanted to say that again. These code names for the FBI are pretty cool. So, and then there was also a question of, did they handle those separate instances differently? So his role with mid-year exam versus his role with Crossfire Hurricane, one looking into Hillary Clinton, one looking into Donald Trump. A lot of what was reported on was that they may have shown some favoritism in the way that they handled the two separate cases, being one showing favoritism towards Hillary Clinton and one showing some sort of disdain towards Donald Trump. Did you notice any of that? Or maybe after the fact, when some people started reporting this, was there even a look at if that happened?
No, well, there was a look by an outside entity, the Department of Justice Inspector General, who did a thorough, exhaustive review of the handling of the Clinton case. And by the way, they're actually working on an investigation into the origins of the Russia case, as you and I speak right now. But that independent review found that obviously these two had, again, deep animus towards Trump. They allowed that to, you know, be on full display within their communications, their political biases. But the independent review found that there were no investigative steps that were impacted by their political beliefs. And I think that's important to understand. I mean, obviously, I'm not giving them a pass because those actions, again, are really disgraceful. But again, to understand how the FBI works, I mean, you have the FBI recruits people who are, you know, top notch, a certain caliber, that are curious about the world. And, you know, you don't have form a curiosity about the world without also forming an opinion about what you learn. So, you know, as they looked at Donald Trump's actions, especially in attacking this Gold Star family and the like, you know, they obviously responded to that, they thought, you know, talking to each other in a very vicious way. But again, the FBI is an organization that, you know, let's say the president was right, that they were trying to concoct an investigation to bring him down. All of the results of their case would have to be laid out in a court of law. If you play it forward, I mean, you see the house of cards that this argument is. So there's no way that would have an impact investigation, even if they wanted to. And I think that that's a good thing, to have these checks and balances. And by the way, to have the inspector general looking over your shoulder. Again, these agencies have such great power, and with that power comes oversight. And, you know, I'm confident that these independent agencies, the inspector general specifically, is able to do an exhaustive review and really try to help, you know, public discern what's fact and what's fiction.
Josh, if people wanted to check out your book, Crossfire Hurricane, where can they find it?
So it is available now in all major booksellers around the country and independent bookstores. It's also available on Amazon. This is my first book. I've been really humbled by the reception that it's received thus far. It was a Amazon new release bestseller. So I want to thank everybody for your support. But that's how you get the book. And again, you know, what I hope the reader understands is that this is not just the view of one person who lived through all of this. I went out and I interviewed dozens of people in and outside of government to get a full, you know, view and spectrum about what transpired in this major high-profile period of time for the FBI. And I, again, go through, no one gets a pass. Even my former boss, FBI Director James Comey, who I think very, very highly of, there are mistakes that he made that I point out as well. So, again, my goal is to help your listener, help the reader, especially in this time where we are being lied to every single day, it seems, by people in power, to try to help bring some semblance of truth, again, to how these agencies operate, what their mission is, and just as important, how that mission is negatively impacted when politicians put these agencies in their crosshairs.
Mm. One quick question. You been on C-SPAN yet?
I've had an event recorded on C-SPAN. I haven't been on C-SPAN, the show, taking calls yet.
Ah, oh, see, that's fun, too. That's when you know you've made it, when the book's out
exactly.
there and C-SPAN welcomes.
I used to watch Washington Journal all the time, so maybe it'll happen.
Crossfire Hurricane, Inside Donald Trump's War on the FBI, author Josh Campbell. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. There's his account of what was going on behind the scenes. Kind of interesting to hear some of those things and some of his memories to it. So I had to look up that Rolling Stones song because I never heard Crossfire Hurricane, and then doing the search, it's actually the first line of Jumpin' Jack Flash. And I didn't realize that until I actually pulled up the song and started to search for it. Okay, let me see if I can get this over here. All right, let's see. This video pop up here. Sometimes these other videos pop up. All right, here we go. Here's Jumpin' Jack Flash. It's a very classic song. I mean, this is one of the very early hits for the Rolling Stones. This would be fun to name FBI Investigations. Here we go. I was born in a Crossfire Hurricane. I gotta say, I never knew that was the lyric. I never knew. If you were to say, I want you to transcribe that, I would have said, well, let's listen to it one more time. Gotta go back one more second. I was born in a class 5 hurricane. I thought he said like class 5 hurricane, like classified or classification, the category. Class 5 hurricane. I never know it was Crossfire Hurricane. Never. Up until this very moment when I was interviewing Josh Campbell. All right, we're about to turn midnight. Things go a little bit crazy. It's kind of like that movie Gremlins when someone gets water on the little gremlin after midnight. Bad news all the way around. 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. We'll take some of your calls. And in the next hour, there's an update on the Loop Trolley. Ooh, wait till you see this one. Do you think it's getting any better? Oh, Big Al, what's going on? Oh, hello?
Hey.
Oh, there we go.
How are you?
Good. I hear you now. It sounded a little scrambled at first.
Yeah. Well, Frankie said that with Mama gone, he's going to stick with you, so you got to cheer him up.
All right. I'll try my best.
So could you imagine, Rec, for one second that any of our guys, Trump and the boys, smashed computers or dropped pilots of money in the middle of the night, or had their Donald Trump Jr. working for $500K for nothing.
Yeah.
And this guy's going to tell me that nothing happened. Okay. Well, guess what? You're exposed like Napoleon. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you know what? We're smarter than all you. So here's what I'm going to tell you, Dems, Dumbs. You run Pocahontas and Sleepy together, and we'll still beat you.
Pocahontas and Sleepy?
All right. And why don't you investigate the other side? Oh, Donald Trump smashed a BlackBerry. Why? Why would you smash a BlackBerry,
yeah,
Hillary?
And the multiple
BlackBerries.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you tell Foamy Comey and all your guys to go look on that side? Oh, why? Because you're all in bed together and you thought you were going to win? Well, guess what? You didn't. And guess what? The swamp is being drained.
Yeah.
And we got William Barr and the rest of them. And you boys better start running for the hills because we ain't going to stop.
Have you listened to Lindsey Graham lately, who's been talking about having Joe Biden and all of them testify in front of Congress to answer
Please
some of these
do.
Questions? I would love to see that.
Comey should be in jail with Hillary and the rest of them.
Huh.
Are you serious? Mr. Comey's assistant, and you're going to lie to us? We're smarter than you all ever were.
All
if
right,
this
Big
was
Al.
The other side, they would expose all of us.
Totally true. You're totally right. All right, thanks, Big Al. Good to hear from you. It's Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.